This is Sheila Hamill and Andrew Ridgwick with New Day Dawning. Welcome to the programme and thank you for joining us on Radio South Tyneside, your caring community radio.
I'm getting ready for a new day dawning. I'm getting ready for a brand new morning. Packing my bags for a heavenly journey. I can't wait to be there. No, I can't wait to be there.
A few weeks ago, I was invited by Brian Burney, director of Daft as a Brush, to lead a Victory in Japan Remembrance Day service in Sunderland. And so in preparation, I began reading up on the war in the Far East. I read several books and many personal accounts of those who were held as prisoners of war by the Japanese army. And these accounts certainly did not make for bedtime reading. They were utterly horrific and had me asking, how could people be so cruel and unfeeling? I'd known before of the suffering of these prisoners, but I hadn't appreciated just how intensely cruel their oppressors were. What was it that Robert Burns once wrote? And man whose heaven-erected face the smiles of love adorn, man's inhumanity to man, make countless thousands mourn. Many must have wondered in those camps, where is God? Why is he so silent and distant? Does he care? Is he there at all? The writer of Psalm 88 asks such questions, crying out to God, are you listening, Lord? And here's a recording I made of it once.
Are you listening, Lord? Are you there? Are you listening, Lord? Are you there?
But I cry to you for help, oh Lord. Yes, I'm crying out to you. And day, all I do is pray.
Are you listening, Lord? Are you there?
My soul is full of trouble, and my life's a living hell, and I have got no strength. I am dying. The darkness is my friend, and all my hope is gone. I've no.
That was a song called Are You Listening, Lord? A question we often ask. One of these books that I read really caught my attention. Some of you may have heard of it, Miracle on the River Kwai by Ernest Gordon, who was a former prisoner of war. At one point in captivity, Ernest was carried into the death house. That's what everyone called the hospital, for no one ever came out once they went in. He had had malaria and dysentery already, and now was at his lowest ebb, dying of polyneuritis. The floor was awash with mud. The smell of tropical ulcers, sweat, the latrines and death itself was overwhelming, and bed bugs teemed over the bodies there. But Ernest was determined not to give in, not to surrender, even though death was all around him. And that's when a voice, which he called the voice of reason, spoke to him in a dark and sinister voice, telling him he would die, just like all the others there. You are part of this nothingness, this decay, there's no escape, it said. Ernest asked, what can I do about it? Then that's when another voice other than reason, a more positive voice, said, you could live. You could be. You could do. There's a purpose you have to fulfill. You'd become more conscious of it every day you kept on living. There is a task for you, a responsibility that is yours and only yours. At that point in time, he wanted nothing to do with religion. He'd reasoned it was just an insurance policy to people born out of fear, something bred into people by their parents in childhood, but which was ineffectual later on in the real world. But certain things began to happen, which demonstrated to him the power of the love and common humanity around him, which got him thinking. Here's a song by the late Pete Scott, which speaks to a lot of people. Faith Don't Fail Me Now.
I've been trying on my own, been almost done and nearly dying on my own, alone and never coming to believe, refusing to receive the gifts you offer to me. To ride the highway in the night means riding blindly like a child. While never wondering why we are drawing breath, refusing to accept the death you suffered for me. When my lock and key mentality was close to tearing down the line from you to me, and I can't see or bend my knee. Thinking only of my own pain and its relief. In a world that's always moving, never still, and I forget the hill you climbed to set me free. When I can't go on, hope seems gone. I see the tree you're hanging on. How I hurt you, but you love me.
What happened next to Ernest was this. Two friends, one a Roman Catholic called Dusty Miller, and a Methodist known as Dinty Moore, tended his ulcers, cleaned him up, cheered him, and brought him back to the land of living. Then one day he was told about another man, also a Christian, who had starved himself to death in the camp so that his dying mucker, his pal, could live. And yet another soldier stepped forward volunteering to take punishment when others in the line were threatened with death because of a stolen shovel, which, as it turned out, had just been misplaced. This man, this volunteer, was beaten to death for no reason at all. No wonder Ernest embraced this kind of heroic faith, which had stood firm and true in the face of such evil. And in time, he discovered that his life did have a purpose after all. It says in John 15:13, greater love hath no one than this, that someone should lay down their life for one's friends. Here's a song called Such Love by Graham Kendrick.
Such love. Thank you.
In verse 21 of today's Gospel reading, it shows that Peter was someone who struggled with those opposing voices too. He had just proclaimed that Jesus was the Christ, the Son of the living God, and was congratulated for it. But when Jesus began to tell his disciples straight afterwards that suffering and death was now just round the corner for him, Peter spoke out protesting, trying to reason with Jesus straight away, opposing him. This isn't what Peter, or the others for that matter, wanted to hear, that Jesus was going to die. It's not what they signed up for. Verse 21 says this, "From that time on, Jesus began to explain to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hands of the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of law, and that he must be killed, and on the third day be raised to life." Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. "Never, Lord," he said, "this shall never happen to you." In other words, this can't be your destiny. You're far too great, far too important. After all, you are the Messiah. But Jesus knew what his destiny was, and he recognized the voice speaking through Peter. That same negative voice that had once spoken so persuasively to him, tempting to turn aside in the desert. And echoes here too of the serpent saying to Eve in the Garden of Eden, "Surely not, you won't die if you eat the fruit. You'll be like gods." Jesus identified this voice, silencing it, and saying sternly to it, "Get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns." How often does a similar battle go on in other minds, including our own, when our resistance is low, or we are in ill health or a hospital? Our next hymn contains these encouraging words. "Though Satan should buffet, though trials should come, let this blessed assurance control that Christ has regarded my helpless estate and hath shed his own blood for my soul." It's a song sung by Sovereign Grace called "It Is Well With My Soul."
When peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever I love, thou hast taught me to say,
got to keep an ear open for that reassuring, calm, still, small voice of God, leading us and guiding us on our way through life? Or do we allow the voice of reason, that negative voice, to have its way? I was at the City Hall once, a long time ago now, when a preacher called Evelyn Christensen was speaking. She was promoting her book called "Lord, Change Me." I don't recall all of her talk now, but I do remember her praying, "Lord, don't change him or her. I'm the one who needs to change." And I also remember her calling for us to be more still and listen to God's voice. Every person in that massive city hall was given a copy of Romans chapter 12, which incidentally is the New Testament lesson for today and last week. And we were also provided with a pen and an envelope. She invited us to read through Romans 12 really slowly and stop and not read on at the moment we thought God was saying something to us. "Don't read any further," she said. "Let God speak and write down a resolution to do something about it. Then pop your letter to yourself in the envelope and read it in 6 months' time. See if you've resolved anything by then. See if your prayers were answered about the situation God pointed out to you." Do you know, it must have been a really meaningful exercise for me to remember it all this time later. Can God speak to us today is the question. Is he real? Make a start by looking up Romans 12 yourself and doing this exercise, inviting God to speak to you. Here's a song from the film The Colour Purple. It's called "Lord, Speak to Me." If you've seen this film, you'll know that a wonderful reconciliation takes place at the end of the song, where a father and his daughter are wonderfully brought together again.
If I were you, I would say yes.
Speak, Lord.
Speak, Lord.
Speak to me.
Speak to me.
Speak, Lord.
Oh, speak, Lord.
Speak to me.
Won't you speak to me?
The final words of our gospel reading today come as a real challenge to us. Jesus said, "Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will find it." Let's listen to Brooklyn Tabernacle Choir singing "Take Up Your Cross."
That the Lord has saved your soul.
then, if Jesus' disciples wanted to be his true followers, then this was the deal. They must be prepared to shoulder their cross too, whatever that happened to be, to walk a similar road of self-denial and face many challenges, perhaps great danger, or even death. And this is still his call to us today. And many across the world are living out such sacrifices in their lives as followers of Jesus. In the prisoner of war camp I spoke of before, the whole atmosphere dramatically changed as the men there began to hear stories of this kind of love that caused men to lay down their lives for others, and Ernest was called to lead a Bible study. The men there reasoned that a God who was indifferent to their suffering was not acceptable to them, but the crucifixion told them that God was in their midst. Jesus did not call us to a life full of blessings and pleasant fellowship and happy sunny days free from anxiety, although that might well be our experience at present in the West. He actually called his followers to walk the difficult road and accept that his life must be lived through ours so that others might know of his love, his healing, and his power to save. Those who live this out in practice may well meet opposition in its many forms, but in return Jesus has promised to be with us forever, and that we will ultimately know his deep peace and his abundant life throughout eternity. I'd like to finish our programme today with one of Christianity's most powerful hymns, which sums up all these thoughts. It was written by Charles Wesley, and it's sung here, led by Stuart Townend. This was my Nana's favourite hymn. And so that's all we have time for today. It's goodbye from me, Sheila Hamill, and Andrew Ridgewick, my technician.
Bye, everyone.
Have a good week, everyone. Bye for now.
And can it be?
Don't